Greetings and good morning, Western Colorado. Thanks so much for listening to KVNF, Mountain Grown Community Radio. It's 8 o'clock, and here's your local newscast for Thursday, April 18th. Big spring storms brought mountain snowpack to 93% of normal along the upper Colorado River, but worries about water are intensifying. The Denver Post reports that the advocacy group American Rivers yesterday declared the Colorado River the number one most endangered river in the nation. A recent federal analysis found there's not enough water in the Colorado River to meet current demands, let alone future demands from expanding cities. The river plays a key role in generating electric power, growing food, and ecosystems. Yet today, it barely reaches the ocean. American Rivers ranked the Colorado the most endangered due to worsening water deficits. Threats include proposed projects along Colorado's Front Range that the group estimates would siphon 300,000 acre-feet more from the river and its tributaries. An acre-foot equals 325,851 gallons, generally believed to be enough to serve the needs of two families of four for a year. American Rivers President Bob Irvin said, quote, "If we keep going the way we're going, we are headed for disaster," end quote. This is the third time since 1991 that American Rivers has ranked the Colorado as the most endangered. Front Range cities divert about 500,000 acre-feet a year from the basin to sustain 80% of today's population. More diversions are planned here and in Utah. Denver Water, which supplies 1.3 million metro residents, is pushing to divert 18,000 more acre-feet from upper Colorado River tributaries. Then there are the demands downriver. The governing 1922 compact obligates the upper states, Utah, Colorado, Wyoming, New Mexico, to send 75 million acre-feet over 10 years to lower states, California, Arizona, and Nevada. The shares were divided based on the assumption that the river carries 15 million acre-feet a year. But federal scientists now say the true annual average is 13.7 million acre-feet. The Grand Junction Daily Sentinel reports that a review of water quality data in western Colorado's Piance Basin found that most groundwater detections of methane were in an area south of Silt, where a possible link between such detections and natural gas drilling has long been debated. The assessment by the U.S. Geological Survey also found that salinity and selenium concentrations, a major concern in the lower Gunnison River Basin, are generally trending downward. The information comes in two new USGS reports that provide a baseline look at groundwater and surface water quality in the Piance Basin. The project was the result of a voluntary effort between energy companies and local, state, and federal agencies. The study area covers about 9,500 square miles from north of Rangeley to south of Delta, from Glenwood Springs to the Utah border. There are no drinking water standards for methane, but it can reach explosive levels in confined spaces. The study reported that most high methane concentrations were near the Mam Creek, Divide Creek area south of Silt. An ongoing study paid for by Garfield County has been looking at methane in the same area. Jeffrey Tyne, a geologist who has consulted for the county, has suggested a link between the presence of methane and drilling, but industry representatives have challenged some of his findings. What happens when competing environmental values clash? Two stories in the current issue of High Country News explore projects in the West where that's happening. One is a small hydroelectric plant in Aspen. KDNK's Nelson Harvey talks to High Country News Associate Editor Sarah Gilman.
The Castle Creek Hydroelectric Project that the city of Aspen's been trying to build for more than 5 years is a small plant with a capacity of just over a megawatt of power. Still, it would help push Aspen toward its goal of getting all city power from carbon-free sources by the year 2015. But the plant's been stalled by homeowners along the creek and environmental groups who argue that it would dewater the stream and harm the wildlife there. They fault the city for seeking exemptions from federal environmental review on the project, and last November they prevailed when Aspenites passed a resolution advising the city to abandon the hydro plant. As Alan Best writes in the current issue of High Country News, it's not that hydro opponents dislike renewable energy or discount the importance of dealing with climate change. In fact, that change is already evident in Aspen, where a city study shows that summer's gotten about 30 days longer in the last 30 years. If the trend continues, it'll devastate the local ski industry. But opponents of the hydro plant think harming a creek to slow climate change is like burning the furniture to heat the house. Sarah Gilman edited the hydro plant story.
It's not so much that environmentalists are against these projects, although that's true for some. It's more that there's sort of this deep division in the community over the appropriate way to address climate change, because I think everybody recognizes that it's a real problem, but they're not necessarily willing to let go of dealing with the smaller environmental problems.
In the course of the hydro fight, many of the project's opponents argue that the plant could easily be replaced by solar panels or wind turbines, like the ones you're hearing now, that could generate the same amount of power off-site. But as it turns out, some of the people who live off-site don't want huge solar projects in their backyards either. In recent years, the state of California has approved 9 huge solar projects on 24,000 acres of land in the Mojave Desert. In another story in the current issue of High Country News, Judith Lewis Murnett writes that some of these cover 6 to 7 square miles of land, and many have met opposition from residents and environmental groups for their impacts on views, public lands, and species like bighorn sheep or desert turtles. It turns out that every form of energy has some impact, and even if the impact of renewables is less polluting than those of coal or oil, that doesn't mean it's less offensive to the people who live nearby. Here again is Sarah Gilman.
I think the first thing to sort of keep in mind is that there is not a large-scale energy source of any kind that is without impacts. With oil and gas drilling, you have hydraulic fracturing, you have habitat fragmentation, you have greenhouse gases. With coal, you have obviously the greenhouse gas impacts and strip mining and shaft mining. Renewable energy, its impact is primarily in terms of the space it takes up. For solar and wind, you need massive swaths of land to generate the same amount of power as you get from a conventional coal plant or any other kind of power plant.
Some residents of the Mojave are also displeased with the idea of becoming an energy colony for the sprawling cities of Southern California, particularly when their own power needs are so modest. They say cities like Los Angeles should invest in rooftop solar and other forms of distributed generation, and maybe, just maybe, learn to use less energy.
I think what people worry about is that climate change is a symptom of a problem. It is a problem we need to deal with, but what it is a symptom of is the overconsumption of resources. And I think people wonder whether building giant power plants of any kind is just more of the same stuff that got us in this mess in the first place. And so maybe ignoring their impacts because they may help us address the larger problem isn't the answer in the long run. I think that's the question at the heart of all of this sort of soul searching in the environmental movement.
Leaving aside the impacts to air, water, and species associated with energy projects, Gilman says we lose something less tangible when we put a massive solar farm in the Mojave Desert. When we fill the empty, imposing spaces like the Mojave, she says, we lose a sense of humility.
Even with the best possible development in the Mojave, you lose this space, this sense of space. You can go to some places there and look out and see nothing but unbroken horizons, no evidence of human industry, nothing. And I think there are very few places in the world like that. And as human industry moves in and consumes that space, I think that sense of smallness is lost. And instead of us feeling small, we make the world smaller.
For KDNK News, I'm Nelson Harvey.
The Western Slope Watchdog reports that Saturday's Freedom Rally in Grand Junction featured speakers whipping up conservative fervor on a variety of issues, ranging from Obamacare to gun control to coal mining. But the overarching theme of the rally was that conservatives must unite to defeat the progressive agenda. The highlighted speaker of the day was Utah Republican State Representative Ken Ivory, who spearheaded a recent bill passed by the Utah legislature demanding that the federal government return federal lands to western states. Ivory's legislation did not target national parks or monuments, but instead asked for the return of public lands containing forests, mineral resources, and water sources. Gunnison-based constitutional and Christian activist David Justice spoke about protecting historically established roads from federal closures. The Grand Junction Daily Sentinel estimated the turnout at less than 200. And finally today, the Aspen Times reports that Aspen has evolved into a hub of Colorado's marijuana industry, at least in a board game called Colorado Cannabis Craze. The game was created by two partners in Louisville, Colorado on April 20th, 2011, but sales didn't really light up until voters passed Amendment 64. The board game sends 2 to 6 players on a journey around Colorado while rolling dice. They must acquire 6 strains of cannabis from 8 eligible cities and towns so they can sell to a dispensary in Denver and make their way to Denver International Airport with $1 million. There are pitfalls along the way, including stops by the Colorado Highway Patrol and rivals' raids on their stash. Due to Aspen's affluence, players can buy the 5 most expensive strains of pot in the town. And like in real life, game players can land in prison in Canyon City or win a jackpot in Cripple Creek. The fake money includes a $50,000 bill featuring a smiling John Denver. The board game is carried exclusively in Aspen at the One Love Aspen Smoke Shop. Thus concludes your local news for Thursday. For KVNF Mountain Grown Community Radio, I'm Eric Gould. Arianna Brochus, if you are listening in Nebraska, I assure you I have a huge grin on my face. Have a great day, everybody, and thanks so much for listening.